And this is our number.
It's time for the fastest 15 minutes in the news. This is Dory's Fastest 15.
I'm increasingly just becoming an innocent bystander for my own radio show these days.
Oh my gosh, if people only knew what just happened in the last 3 minutes.
So I come in the studio right as you're starting your newscast, and Nicole says to me, Sean really wants you to do an owl for the hour number two echo. So we can record that while traffic's going on, because your mic would be on otherwise. And so I come in, I try to do an owl. It's hour number two. And then Sean goes,
she didn't say owl.
She said owl.
I said owl because that's what I heard.
She said, Sean wants you to do an owl.
So I just howl.
I don't ask
he
why.
Said howl.
Then Sean says, not an owl, a howl, like a wolf.
Yeah, and time was of an essence here.
Yeah, but I don't even ask any questions. Nicole says do an owl.
I was just wondering, like, what was
owls
going on
are
over
Halloween-y.
There?
Sean says, no, a howl, not an owl. So I have to go in his studio and do that stupid thing. And I have no idea why.
I don't know.
Because
Sean
it's
was
Halloween.
Very adamant about it.
It's Halloween.
But, okay.
But like can you use
happy
the owl
in everybody?
I'm just an innocent bystander for my own radio show.
I mean,
days.
I have the owl here unaffected, so it's raw without the echo. Do you want to hear that?
Yeah, listen to the brilliant job that I did when I thought he wanted an owl, not a howl. And this is our number two.
And this is what I hear just before I go on the air, and I'm thinking, what is wrong with Dory?
I'm a 57-year-old man. What is wrong with me? What's wrong? What's wrong with everything? Jeez. Speaking of Halloween, we have, when are we closing down this contest here?
I think 2:30.
2:30. Okay. So if you've already done it but haven't sent it to us yet, we've gotten some great submissions for your Halloween pumpkin design that best represents our region in the Seattle area in 2018. And we've gotten some really good ones. We also have gotten some cheaters. I don't like this. Some people have just lifted pictures off the internet and sent them to us as their entry. And we can sniff that sort of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So we have this pumpkin facial recognition software. And we run it through to make sure that you haven't plagiarized your entry. But whoever is the winner, if you still haven't done it, you have an hour and 20 minutes. We've upped the prize, too. We have a Seahawks 12 flag and two tickets to the Taste of the Seahawks, which is where a bunch of restaurants come
nice.
In. And it's a big fundraiser for Fight Hunger. And it's a great cause. So,
Seahawks, a lot of Seahawks past and present show up.
Yes.
You and I are going.
Yeah. Yes. Yes, we are.
Yeah.
We'll be there. So anyway, if you have a Seattle-themed, 2018 Seattle-themed pumpkin, send us the picture. You can do it via Facebook. You can email it to us. But you have until 2:30 this afternoon, and that's when we're closing things down on this. Okay, let's get rolling here. Lots of stuff to talk about in our Fastest 15. And I fear this is going to happen more and more. A Ballard man is now going to face a murder charge. And it's just a shocking and disturbing story. But this guy, he had his house broken into on multiple occasions. And he was certain, he thought, that he knew which homeless guy, and there are a bunch of homeless addicts in his Ballard neighborhood, and he was confident that he knew which one was breaking into his house. And so one day, this guy, the Ballard homeowner, he, according to prosecutors, became fixated on this Licton Springs homeless guy. And so John Davis, he's 55 years old. He's now been charged with second-degree murder. And he shot and killed a 26-year-old homeless man named Daniel Alberto. According to the charging papers, Davis claims he fired in self-defense. But what the prosecutor wrote, Davis has harbored significant animosity toward the victim, Alberto, and the local homeless community for months. Davis was fixated on exacting consequences on the man who broke his window, Alberto, and made statements on several occasions that he might have to take matters into his own hands with regard to fighting crime. And they say that Alberto's housing status is unclear. Licton Springs, Tiny House Village, says he didn't live with us. Davis lives in Ravenna. And what happened was Davis grabbed his gun, confronted people while armed. Prosecutors said he had been warned more than once by Seattle cops that he should refrain from hostily confronting people on the streets. One time, Davis searched out and followed a man that he had earlier reported to police for trespassing on his property. Then he called 911, told the dispatcher he had a gun and had to seek out criminals as a form of self-defense. And shortly after that, he reported one of his windows had been broken by a homeless person. And then Davis kept calling police about the broken window. He had photographed the person who broke his window, he said. And before the shooting, he had followed Alberto around. And then he was back on his way to his neighborhood. And that's when he said he confronted Alberto on the street with his emergency brake on. Both front windows rolled down. He claimed he spoke to Alberto through the passenger window. Alberto threatened Davis, he said, circled in front of Davis's car, and came to the window armed with a knife. Davis said he feared for his life and shot and killed the guy. Surveillance video that the police got said Alberto never walked in front of his car or physically prevented Davis from leaving. Doesn't say if he had a knife or not. And that's when he was shot and killed. Detectives did find a small knife near Alberto's body. And I'm telling you right now, this is going to happen more and more. With the depolicing in Seattle, you heard the story that we had exclusively a couple of months ago about the woman in Magnolia. There was a crazy guy who was breaking into her house, claiming it was his house, terrorizing her. And we talked with this homeowner time and again, and her brother said, I'm getting a vigilante group together. We got former military, former cops. We're armed. We know where this guy is. We're going to go get him. And I had to talk him down. I'd say, look, then you're going to be the one who ends up in prison. But with the depolicing that's going on in Seattle, with the fact that we have a city council that is encouraging as many drug vagrants as possible to our city. And I don't know if this guy who was shot was a druggie or a vagrant, but the more we depolice, the more citizens are going to feel like they have to take the law into their own hands. And guys like this are going to end up in prison because of it.
But I think it's important to point out that we don't know, you know, anything about the victim other than, I mean, he did have an address. He did not live in this Licton Springs tiny village. And as far as we can tell, he did absolutely nothing wrong except that this guy had fixated on
Wait a second. I mean, the guy says he's certain that's who broke into his house and broke his window.
Well, just because he says that's the case, it doesn't mean that's it. And certainly, he's killing someone over
a broken window. I'm not advocating killing someone.
But I think
that's why I talked the other guy down.
Yeah, but what's happened now is that there are people. I mean, I get the frustration. I see it, you know, in my neighborhood and you know, everywhere you go in the city, I see it too. And I do live in Seattle.
Nobody's advocating what this guy did. I'm just talking about reality. And the reality is, the more drug vagrants we bring into the city, and combine that with the active depolicing that's going on with Seattle cops, you're going to have more and more citizens who feel a helpless desperation and get pushed over the edge to take the law into their own hands.
And that is absolutely not the answer.
I'm not saying it is. I'm talking reality. The reality is, this is going to happen more and more until we have a city council and a mayor and a police department that starts fixing this. It's going to happen more and more. It shouldn't happen. Nobody's saying that this guy did the right thing. I'm talking the reality of the situation. That's a dangerous combination. Drug criminals and people who feel like the police are not helping them at all.
Do you think do you have any concern that all homeless have been criminalized, though? I mean, do you have any concern that, I mean, just the word homeless is so loaded anymore.
That's why I don't say homeless. I say drug vagrants. I'm talking specifically about the vast majority who are in that situation because, you know, sadly, they've, you know, either, you know, made the choice or have not made the choice to get help. That's their life. They and and we're doing all the wrong things in this city. You know, they're talking about putting up a giant tent now, like Tacoma's done. I have talked to a lot of addicts, and they tell me the only way you get help is when you hit rock bottom. And there are a lot of addicts who say it's too comfortable to be a drug addict in Seattle. They will give you a tent. They'll give you a small apartment. You can go poop in a planter in Lake City, and the city officials will move you to the head of the line to get you out of sight, like the story we told everyone yesterday. And as long as we make it a comfortable, easy place to hold on to your deadly addiction, of course we're going to have more and more of that here. We are embracing all the wrong policies because we do stuff around here to feel good instead of to actually do good. And this is what's happening now. And you got a bunch of frustrated citizens who know the cops aren't going to be any help. And it's a horrible situation. And by the way, when the Seattle police denied depolicing, every police department in the entire region knows that Seattle is actively depolicing. And where that's come from, if it's come from the mayor, the chief, the council, it is an absolute fact. They deny it, and that is not true. Every cop in the region knows what's going on here in Seattle. Next up in the Fastest 15, and then you have all these other crimes. Channel 4 had, and 7, they had a bunch of stories on the crimes that have happened just in the last couple of hours. A Ballard hair salon was targeted by burglars twice in the last month. And I think about it. I talked to a woman who had a salon in Ballard a few months ago, and she was talking about the people who were, you know, pooping on the sidewalk right outside her business. I don't know if this is the same salon, but she said her customers are afraid to come. All these business owners have had it. Channel 4, ComoNews.com, talked with a stylist at this salon, and she said, you know, we'd gone 10 years without any serious problems, but it's just gotten horrible all of a sudden.
We've been here for 12 years, and nothing like this has ever happened before.
And here's what the burglars took there.
It was bad that some of the girls, the day of the robbery, couldn't even work. So not only did they get their shears taken, they lost a whole day of work.
$8,000 in shears, $5,000 in product.
It's unfortunate, so that they would hit a small business like this.
Yeah, that's just the reality. Is they will hit anything because there is no conscience on the streets. And this is why we need our city officials to start doing something.
The neighborhood's really changing. The rents are going up and it's less safe.
Down in Pioneer Square, the business is there demanding action from the city because an art gallery owner was assaulted. They talked, Channel 4, ComoNews.com, talked with Fen Huang, the owner of the building with the Foster White Gallery.
Open palm slapped me across the face a couple times. Then I must have crumpled, but he hit me on the back of the head.
So we're just having women getting beat up while they're trying to work.
That's not a homelessness issue. That's an...
And here's the senior vice president and chief administration officer for the city.
That's not a homelessness issue. That's an enforcement issue. It can't always be that we can't do anything because we have no place for them to go. I mean, we can't hear that year after year. That's not a crisis. That's just a lack of action.
And that's actually with the business, with the gallery, this person. And, yeah, they all know that the cops aren't going to help when they have, you know, these homeless people physically assaulting women.
Like graffiti, and you allow it to happen. Encampments, you allow it to happen. It will just advertise that it's okay to have encampments here.
And then Channel 7, Cairo News, they talked with the manager of an espresso stand, which was the victim of an armed robbery. Danny Cherry at this coffee stand said he didn't look that suspicious.
You always think that it's going to be like a big scary man in a mask, and he just looked super normal.
His hands were hidden.
He had his hands in his pockets, which I didn't really think was super weird. It's kind of cold outside.
But then he pulled his hands out.
I knew that it was a real gun. It wasn't like a BB gun. And then he said, your day's about to get a little bit worse. I'm robbing you.
Your day's about to go worse.
Scenarios were running through my head. I didn't know if he was going to want my wallet or my keys.
And she says, but at least she wasn't shot.
I could not be talking to you guys right now. And it could have definitely been a lot worse.
So this is just the state of the region right now. And this is on our city officials. It's on the mayor. It's on the council. It's on the police department. You got women being assaulted in Pioneer Square. You got multiple robberies for businesses that are already just battling to get by. You have armed robberies at espresso stands, and on it goes. And it's just gone downhill really, really fast, and it's really sad to watch, which is why I'm not just being a silent bystander. I'm making sure that you're aware of all of these stories. Next up in the Fastest 15, Ursula, you flip a coin 10 times.
Mm-hmm.
It comes up heads 10 times in a row.
No way.
On that 11th flip, would you be more likely to bet on tails?
No.
Of course not. Because you have some common sense.
Yes.
Yeah. Every flip of a coin is 50-50, regardless of the past. It's like when you're at a craps table. There's an old saying, the dice have no memory. They don't care what... there are people who play roulette, and they, like, chart the numbers. Blacks come up six straight. I'm going to bet red. Has nothing to do with it. Which is why I see this headline in the Seattle Times, and I praise the Seattle Times for their good stories. The guy who wrote the story, kind of thin-skinned. Last time I criticized one of his stories, he went on after me on Twitter.
Uh-oh.
I know. That's never happened before. Somebody going after me. Here's the headline. These are the luckiest and unluckiest places to play the Washington Lottery data show. There's no such thing as a lucky play. Because the lottery is hit more often in certain zip codes and certain zip codes have not, it's all random. And if you go to the place, so what are you supposed to do? Are you going to go to the place where it hits the most often because it's the luckiest? Are you going to go to the place where it's hit the least because it's due? No, it doesn't matter. The data of gambling is everything is a random occurrence. And the past has nothing to do with the future. And so I'm always disturbed when people take numbers and just they can get clicks. They put up some phony headline. And he kind of acknowledges it in the story, what I just said.
Although I will say that when we were trying to figure out, when I was trying to figure out where to buy the
tickets,
Mega
Millions.
Yeah, don't drag
me in. There's no we in this.
I know. Well, Nicole bought your ticket.
Yeah, I know, which I still feel bad about.
So I kind of looked at the history, and the convenience store down the street has never had a winning ticket. I did consider going
out.
Going elsewhere.
Is it unlucky or is it due?
Well, you just kind of want to know, hey, you know, what places, apparently in the International District, several big winners have happened. So I was like, should I drive over there? I'm just telling you this to drive you nuts.
She's just bugging me now. Okay, that is your Fastest 15.
This has been the Fastest 15 Minutes in the News. Fast Dory's Fastest 15.
We told you in the big lead at noon about just an unbelievable scam of the taxpayers. It's a story that was broke by Chris Ingalls with the King 5 investigators. And if you haven't heard the latest, don't go anywhere. Chris Ingalls joins me next here on the Dory Monson Show. A few days ago, we had on Chris Ingalls from the King 5 investigators. He had a great story about a low-income condo complex in Bellevue where a high-powered Olympia couple, one the chief education policy guy for Jay Inslee and the other his wife, the clerk of the House of Representatives in Olympia, they make $280,000 a year between them, and they bought a low-income condo that they pledged in the contract would be their primary residence. And in the course of reporting that story, Chris Ingalls found out about some other malfeasance with this low-income deal that you and I are supporting with our tax dollars. And Chris Ingalls from the King 5 Investigators joins us once again here on Cairo Radio. Chris, always good talking with you.
Yeah, Dory, thanks for having me back. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, this is just a great story and a great series that you've been presenting here. So tell me the latest one that you had last night about another condo owner who seems to be violating the terms of what the taxpayers are supporting here.
Well, there's actually two more condo owners, so we have three now that we've looked at in total. This condominium complex in a nice neighborhood in Bellevue has nine units that are designated for affordable housing. They're smaller and less expensive than the other ones. And there's three of them where there's real questions about the people who own those condo units. The Olympia couple that we talked about last week. And then we have a real estate agent who it doesn't seem has lived in that condo for several years. She's rented it out. And another woman who's lived in California for 5 years and told me over the phone that she doesn't plan on coming back for a couple more years. So it comes down to this basic question, Dory. If you don't need the place to live in, do you need to have it at all? Shouldn't those affordable housing units that are supported by taxpayers be going to people who are really in need?
Well, yeah, and as you point out in your story, the taxpayers, the group that oversees this program is called ARCH, a regional coalition for housing. The taxpayers have subsidized these condos and other housing units to the tune of more than $50 million, and this particular one comes from taxpayers in East King County cities, correct?
That's right. This is each city sort of strikes its own agreement. There are 15 different East King County cities. Bellevue is the largest, and that's where this condo is, that make these particular arrangements. And then ARCH is the administrator of these housing programs for those 15 cities. And when this Bellevue condo was built in the mid-1990s, the developer got fee waivers and zoning changes that made that a more profitable project, with the understanding that those condos would remain designated as affordable housing for 50 years.
Yeah, and you were able to confront Sandy Yin. Now, is she the real estate agent who has been renting this out?
Yeah, so she bought that along with her grandmother in 2005, I think, and, you know, at least since 2012, and if people at the McKee are to be believed, even before then, she really moved out for the most part, and has been renting it out ever since.
Well, and here's where Chris, in his story on King 5, confronted Sandy Yin.
Ms. Yin, I'm Chris Ingles from King 5 News.
And she claimed that she lived there.
Was that your primary residence there, or did you move out of it at some point?
It's my primary, and then it's also my grandma's primary.
Okay, and you're telling me, Chris, that just absolutely is not true.
Well, the people who said that she didn't live there not only, you know, told us that. These are other residents of the McKee, the treasurer of the McKee Homeowners Association. They had documentation showing that they complained to ARCH in 2012 about Sandy Yin because they were concerned that these strangers were coming in to the building. You know, it's a secure building. And they also, over the years, captured Craigslist ads and Airbnb ads where she was listing this condo for rent, which is a clear violation of ARCH's rules and something that you're not allowed to do with that condo complex. You're not allowed to put it up on Craigslist or Airbnb for short-term rentals.
Well, and one of those whistleblower neighbors is Laura Duncan, who told Chris that she has never seen Sandy Yin or her grandma.
I have not ever seen her grandmother. I don't think her grandmother has ever lived in that unit.
But Yin claims she didn't do anything wrong.
Weren't you just renting the condo out or leasing it to people?
20, sorry, there's just like a bug on me. So basically have everything approved. I didn't do anything that's against any rules.
Okay, and clearly from the documents you have, this is blatantly against the rules, everything she was doing.
Yeah, so there's one caveat to that, Dory. You can go to ARCH and say, look, I'm getting transferred, let's say, and they can give you a one-year waiver where you may be allowed to rent out the unit. And they did do that in 2012 when the McKee folks complained about Sandy Yin not living in the apartment. They sort of gave her the benefit of the doubt, and they gave her a one-year waiver, which they probably shouldn't have, but they did. And, you know, she clearly overstayed that 1 year with rentals continuing right up until, you know, probably within the last year.
And then when Chris persisted with her, she was done answering questions.
You're going to have to talk to my lawyer if you need any more answers.
Yeah, and that's always reporter gold there when they They don't have any way to legitimately, reasonably answer the reasonable questions that you're asking.
And I asked her for her lawyer's name and how I could get in contact with that person, and she didn't have a name. So I don't know if there is a lawyer, but I haven't heard from that person yet.
So then the question becomes, Chris, since this involves a ripoff of the taxpayers, and the taxpayers are investing a lot of money, supposedly for a good cause, to help working class and lower income people get into the housing market for the first time. If this is a ripoff of tax dollars, is there anything criminally chargeable with what these owners are doing?
Well, you know, you sort of cross a hard and fast line, Dory, and it's a great question, but there's definitely some things that Arch has allowed people to do here, and that could be the out for some of these owners. Is Arch too lenient? Is Arch not keeping an eye and not keeping its house clean? You know, those are all questions that our stories tried to raise without any certain answer. But was there fraud involved here? That's going to take somebody with a lot better understanding of the law than I have.
Well, but if Arch is, doing a wink, wink, nod, nod, are they hand picking people who are able to rip off the system? I mean, are these some kind of, because the Olympia Power couple you talked about last week, you would think, especially since the woman in that couple helped write some of the affordable housing laws in our state. Is there some kind of insider deals that's going on with Arch here?
Well, I do have some of those same questions, Dory, just considering who these people are. You mentioned the Olympia couple. They, Nona Snell Altman has worked in affordable housing for a number of years. Before that, she worked for the Washington State Housing Commission, which works on financing affordable housing. So she has a lot of experience in that area. And then you look at the lady that we put on TV last night, Sandy Yin. She is a real estate agent. And you wonder, what kind of inside knowledge do these people have? Have they exploited loopholes in this program? Do they have friends somewhere? I don't know the answer to that, but I'm asking myself the same questions that you are.
Yeah, and I know you have to maintain journalistic integrity as a talk show host. I have a lot more leeway, but the question I asked after your story last week is, Jay Inslee going to keep as his chief education policy advisor a guy who, it looks to me, is ripping off the taxpayers? Is the House going to keep as their chief clerk a woman who looks to be ripping off the taxpayers? Have you heard anything more? Because at first, I know the governor's office was attacking you for your reporting of that story. Have you heard anything more from the governor and any consequences for them?
Well, several days in, they sort of upped the game. We were getting governor's communication staff telling us that we were off base and our story was unfair. And then it was the chief of staff, David Postman, from the governor's office, who sent us an email yesterday criticizing our story, our method, our fairness, our journalism. They particularly don't like the way that I approached Nona Snell Altman outside the Capitol building where she works. So they are very defensive, and surprisingly so, I would say, given that it seems that this story has raised a lot of questions that the public should be asking about this program, given all the things we've shown over the past few days.
Well, that's bizarre to me, Chris. I mean, David Postman was a newspaper guy, a Seattle Times guy, and he's criticizing a journalist for asking a government employee about what appears to be a ripoff of taxpayers. I mean, that's really disturbing to me, Chris. If the governor's office is telling you that you shouldn't have been asking those questions.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I really do.
I mean,
the quote that stands out to me from David Postman is, "I do not understand your coverage of this issue." That seems broader than just, leave the Altmans alone or that kind of thing. That we're asking the wrong questions about this program. And that's much broader than just their employees and their office, which, frankly, when I contacted the governor's office, I just expected a no comment. But they have full tilt defended the Altmans and raised questions about our coverage of this issue.
That's almost scary to me. I mean, I guess I'm not that surprised, but man, that's I mean, they always criticize another politician at the national level for going after the press, but they don't have any problem doing that themselves. That's pretty disturbing. Well, that means it's a great story, and I've told you that many times. That's exactly what it means, Chris.
Well, I appreciate your coverage of it, and we're going to stay on it, of course, and I imagine that maybe we'll be talking about this in the future as we sort through more tips about a regional coalition for housing, Arch.
Yeah, okay. I'll watch with great interest. Chris, I really appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Thanks so much, Dory. Take care.
Chris Ingles with the King 5 Investigators. And you can see his whole story. You should check it out. It's up at king5.com. And we have, I'd love to hear your comments. The Online Trading Academy text line, 98973. That's where you can reach me directly. 98973. And we have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. About an hour ago, I played a soundbite from CNN last night where Don Lemon was just out and out blatantly being a racist. But liberals can be the most virulent racist that you'll ever see. I got a text from the 206. Dory, the story you shared about Don Lemon on CNN is one of the most offensive I've heard. As a white male, I don't know how this is not hate speech or hate mongering. It's truly a sad state of affairs in our country right now. Thank you for sharing. And if you weren't listening an hour ago, that was it was Don Lemon last night saying,
I keep trying to point out to people not to demonize any one group or any one ethnicity.
Don't demonize any one group or one ethnicity. Good. I agree. Go on.
But we keep thinking that the biggest terror threat is something else. Some people who are marching, you know, towards the border like it's imminent. And when the last time they did this, a couple hundred people came and they, you know, most of them did get into the country. Most of them got tuckered out before they even made it to the border. So we have to stop demonizing people. And
yes, do not demonize any race or ethnicity. I agree.
Realize the biggest terror threat in this country is white men, most of them radicalized up to the right.
What?
And we have.
So we weren't going to demonize any race or ethnicity.
We have to start doing something about them. There is no travel ban on them. There is no ban on, you know, they had the Muslim ban. There is no white guy ban. So what do we do about that?
Yeah, when 60 people are shot in a weekend in Chicago, in Baltimore. That fits your narrative there, Don Lemon. So anyway, but just to illustrate how, you know, white people, or not white people, liberals, tend to be the biggest racists. Listen to this. This is a Democratic senator in Indiana, Joe Donnelly, who's running for his Senate seat. And listen to the language this guy uses in talking about minorities. And again, leftists tend to see everybody through the prism of race. That's why they talk about it so obsessively.
We want everybody to have a chance in Indiana and in America. And my offices reflect that, both on the campaign side and on the Senate side.
Go on.
State director is Indian American, but he does an amazing job.
What? He's Indian American, but he does an amazing job? What, you didn't expect an Indian American would do an amazing job? Go on.
Our director of all constituent services, she's African American. But she does an even more incredible job than you could ever imagine.
But she's African American, but she does a great job. This is how Democrats think. They group people by race because they need to get their votes. She's black, but she does a good job. Oh, yeah, I guess you wouldn't have thought otherwise going in, would you, Senator? Big lead to two now.